Tuesday, the 23rd of September, Kof Gimel Elul, Yom Gimel Tzlichus, Rabbi Tzvi Belovsky, the primeval call, the shofar in the thoughts of the Shem Mishmuel.
Morning, morning. There is an important sugya on a test, Zayin Omid Aleph from Rosh Hashanah, which refers to the practices and the purpose of the various Yom Tovim. Here's the Braisa, and we'll use this as a platform for eventually discussing one or two slightly more esoteric and complex ideas. Tanya, Omer Rebbe Yehuda, I'm sure, Rebbe Akiva, Seyma, Omer Torah. Why does the Torah say, he says in the name of Rebbe Akiva, Hivyor Omer Pesach, bring the Omer offering, the barley offering on Pesach, and finish our Pesach with the Mam Tavuahu. Because Pesach is the time of the grain. Omer Kodesh Baruch Hu, God says, Hiviu lefonai oimer v'Pesach, kidei shtisborech lochem tavua shebasodos. Bring me this Omer offering, somehow acknowledge thereby that I, God, am responsible solely for the success of your field, and by so doing, I will bless the remaining produce in your fields. Why does the Torah say, bring the shtei alechem, the two special loaves on Shavuos? Because, and this will be familiar, this is following the theme of the early Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Shavuos is a time when the fruits begin to ripen. On my Kodesh Baruch Hu, hiviu lefonai shtei alechem batzeres, kadesh is Baruch Hu lechem peiros ilon. Bring me the shtei alechem, which acknowledge that as the fruit is ripening, you are also dependent on me, in order that I will bless the fruits on the trees for you. Umitnei ma om la Torah nischu mayim b'chog. Why does the Torah say, bring a water libation? It's interesting, the Torah says it comes from the Nevi'im, actually, it's not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. But why is it that the Torah requires us to perform the water libation on Sukkah? So Omar Kulish Baruch Hu Nischu Lefonai Mayim B'chad Kadeshis Baruch Hu Lochem Gishmei Shono. Because it's the time when we're being judged about the rainfall, and God says, libate water before me on Sukkah, in order that the rains of the year ahead will be blessed. That's all there. That was all kind of introductory for our purposes for this. Say before me, Rosh Hashanah Malchus Zichronus Hashofros. Say Rosh Hashanah Malchus Zichronus Hashofros. These have been formulated as the three central brachas of the long Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Say Pesukim of Malchus Zichronus Hashofros. Why Malchus? Malchus Kedei Shetim Yichudi Aleichem. Malchus, in order that you shall proclaim me as king over you. Zichroinus kadeshial zichroinechem lefonai, the toivo. Remembrances, in order that your remembrance shall come up before me favourably. Ubame'an, with what? Bashofar. It's a strange structure, because it discusses what the Malchus is for and what the Zichroinus are for. And it said, how do you do it with a shofar? We would have assumed it would have said something about why to read the Pesukim of Shofros. It's not really our subject. That's the introductory source. How do you do this with Shofar? Now, there is a discussion, and here the key source is the Ritva, as to what the phrase of a Mavar Shofar, with what? With the Shofar. Which part of the Braisa does that phrase apply to? It's not entirely clear. The Ritva says as follows. Ikar HaPirush, the primary explanation of this Abraisa, da'akulahu koi, that the phrase ubamav shofar, with what the shofar, applies to all of the sections that have gone before, meaning it applies, obviously not going right back into Pesach, Shavuos and Sukkos, but it means how do you do this applies to Malchus, Zichronus and Shofros. And of course that has some halachic import, in that we blow the shofar following each of these brachas. In some shuls, depending on nusach, after the silent brachas, and in every shul after the chazaras hashatz. How do you do this with the shofar? This phrase applies to the malchus as well. B'mor roi lahamlichoi How does he explain it? With what device, with what means, is it appropriate to crown God king, ulahazkir zichronchem, and to ensure that your remembrance appears, lefonai, before me? But shofar, you should do it with a shofar. So the key point we're drawing from this is that Ritzvah understands that the phrase b'mer b'shofar applies also to the malchus, even though you could read it as something as a separate phrase at the end. That in order to perform the act of declaring HaKadosh Baruch Hu Melech on Rosh Hashanah, you need the shofar. Whereas you would have thought, read the psukim, make the declaration, say the tefillahs. Why isn't that good enough? That's the question. And he gives a proof. Shekein Kasiv, because it writes with respect to the coronation of Shaul HaMelech. Yizku ha'om b'shoifros, the people blew on shoifros, the amlichu es Shaul aleihem, and they proclaimed Shaul king over them. LaMelech as the king, that's the pasuk. Ritzvah continuing the comparison between our case and the malchus of Shaul HaMelech. Malchus of the Arrow, Kain Malchus of the Rakiyah. And we can compare the celestial sovereignty with what's going on down, the terrestrial sovereignty, what's going on down here. They're the same principles apply. If you need the shofar to proclaim him the Melech here, you need the shofar to proclaim him the Melech there. Why wasn't it good enough to shout, Shaul is the king? For some reason it wasn't good enough, they needed the Teruah as well. That's why we blow for each of the brachas, because we need the process of blowing the shofar to somehow make the things effective. And he quotes also as a supporter the Chayim Nira Min HaTosefta, for the sake of completeness, I'll read the rest of the Ritzvah. He quotes him as a Tosefta, the Samyar, Baisa, Hosa, Malchius, Shetamichua, and Maisi, Yotal, Zichron, Shial, Zichron, Cholophon, and Otsova, Shofas, Shitalev, Tifal, Scholophon, Betrua. It mentions the Trua, the idea that the shofar is required. So that's the source, that the Ritzvah reads it, and we don't quite know why. Now, as the Ritzvah reads it, that it's necessary to use the shofar to accompany the process of proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu Melech, where we'd have thought the psukim, the declarations, our statements with intention, would be sufficient. What is interesting, and that's for another time, is that what happens on Shabbos? When Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we have no shofar. So it would appear from a simple reading of this that our ability to proclaim a Kodesh Baruch Hu Melech is defective. There's something missing. It's incomplete. That can't be. And perhaps on another occasion one can explore how Shabbos, in some of the thinking of these sorts of sources, replaces the shofar, and the tefillahs with the shofar, the tefillahs on Shabbos may well end up with the same result. That's for another time. That's the starting point. Now, everything else I'm going to say comes from an essay of which I'm very fond, in the Chelek HaMayotim of the Shem Shmuel, Tof Reish Ayin Vov. So he's writing around 90 years ago, and he quotes this Gemara with the Ritzvah, and he says, "Ein amuvan adimyon." So they don't really quite understand the comparison between proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu the Melech on Rosh Hashanah and the case of Shaul HaMelech. He said, how do you know that the shofar in the case of Shaul was indispensable to his proclamation of Melech? Perhaps the purpose of the shofar was to publicize it, so everyone got to know about it. You know, these days there'd be a television broadcast or an email will go round, but in order for people to get to know about it, they may have made lots of noise about it. Maybe it's nothing to do with making him a Melech, just to get people to know about it. Or perhaps it's a simcha. We're very excited. So part of the celebrations were tooting on their shofar. How do you know that the shofar is indispensable to the process of the proclamation of Malchus? That's his question. And of course he's writing the question because he's got something to say about it. That's a kind of space standard, standard structure. So in order to answer that, he delves first of all into one or two ideas that come from the Gemara, and then he starts to, I think, begin to think about the Kabbalah of the Arizal. So, he named Maya's shofar Gedolah Maya's HaTefillah. He says, in some respect, shofar is greater than tefillah. That's fairly obvious, he says. You know, Tefillah is the precise structure of Tefillah is Midrabonim. The exact status of Tefillah itself is discussed. Shofar is indisputably a Deraisa requirement. And it would seem on Rosh Hashanah, yeah, you could quite comfortably read the Psukim and come away without really knowing that you had to say special Tefillahs, but you could certainly read the Psukim and know that you had to blow the Shofar. It's absolutely clear. And so on. And then he goes on to say that it may even be greater than Korbanos, and he brings a rather convoluted and lengthy discussion to suggest that the process of the Shofar, what Shofar can achieve, whatever it moves in the heavenly realm, may be even more powerful than Korbanos as well. Okay. Now he begins his key idea. The idea that is probably familiar, and it appears in other sources, but I think he explains it particularly well and accessibly. Kol ha-shvoyos ha-yotzis milamalo hin ruchnius legamri. He says it's in that the spiritual world is completely divorced from the physical world, and everything that comes from it is pure, undiluted ruchnius. The problem is, of course, that is incompatible with the physical world. That, and as he explains, as this hashpor, this divine flow, this pure, undiluted spirituality traverses the various realms, the realm of the Melochim, and eventually it comes down to us. It has to, as he puts it, it has to be misladesh b'inyoni olomos ohein. In order for it to be accessible, in order to have any meaning in that realm, it has to be dressed up, clothed, if you like, I would even say disguised in some kind of externality which is matim, which is appropriate for that realm. If the Melochim will access it, it has to be dressed up in an angelic guise. If human beings can access it, it has to be, probably the right word is corporealized. It has to be dressed, mislovish, in some kind of corporeality. It has to be physicalized, if you like, in order for it to have any shaykhus or association with human beings. As he said, it goes through the angelic world, until eventually this flow, this divine influence, will make its appearance in our physical world. And it has to be mislavshim belvush gashmi manush. It has to be dressed up, it has to be clothed in a physical guise, made really of the physical four, as he puts it, the four elements, which is just a way of saying that it has to actually be in a way that we can access it in the physical world. And he brings a moshe, I won't read every word of it, but he compares it to a fruit which is contained in its shell. A nut actually might be a better image. The nut, in order for the nut to be protected, in order for it to exist, to survive to the point that we can actually eat the nut, it has to grow in a shell. But if you eat the shell, you've got it wrong. If you throw the shell away and eat the inside, and you realize that the whole purpose of the shell was to enable the nut to be delivered to us in a usable form, then you've got the right idea. Break the shell away, throw it away, and then you can eat the inside. But if you make a mistake and think that's the whole thing, and you stick it in your mouth, it's going to be an unfortunate experience and you won't enjoy the nut. That's the image that he uses. Mikol mokom ha'ika hu aruchni shebohem. The whole purpose is the spirit, it's a physical manifestation to convey a spiritual concept. And you're going to have to look behind the manifestation in order to properly understand what is coming into this world. And he quotes an Ari to support this idea. This is in his type of writing, this is a common structure. He quotes early sources, and then he draws on an idea that has come down to us from the Ari, but he's made it accessible. And then he quotes something from his father. Many of the ideas he quotes, the Avnei Nezer is known perhaps as the primary posek in Poland in the second half of the 19th century, but he's not really so well known as a Baal Hashkofa, but if you read the Shem Shmuel in most essays, particularly the essays that are soon after he was Nisra in 1910, quote and draw very heavily on the thinking of his father, Avnei Nezer, most and much of which has come down to him from the Kotzka, who was his father-in-law. So what does my late father say, after a long list of abbreviations for which we learned that he held him in high esteem and he's no longer alive? It's very beautiful. My father said that the spiritual flow, which comes from the spiritual world, is the connecting force between the donor and the recipient. Of course, because that spiritual flow comes from a higher realm, and eventually it comes down here to the lower physical world, and it joins the physical and spiritual world, and as such, it's that flow, that influence, that spiritual opportunity, which connects our Kodesh Baruch Hu with this world. It's obvious, but it's worth saying anyway. And the Jews who are seeking this flow, that's what it's all about really, to try to turn ourselves into receptacles for this divine flow, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes freely all the time. It's more intense and more specific at certain times of the year, but we are trying to turn ourselves into receptacles, that's our desire, so we can become utensils or vehicles for the Hashpor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Einei nehem noises legashmis Hashpor levav. We're not just interested in the physical manifestation, how the bracha appears, whether it's wealth or health or success or some other opportunity or gift. We're supposed to be recognizing that that gift can be seen as an opportunity to connect our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because if we see what the purpose of this physical gift is, the spirit that it contains, and the spirit is what connects to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's the goal, to create a greater spiritual self and a greater spiritual world. That's what he quotes from his father. The Yesh Lahavin, it means one needs therefore to understand every flow ought to bring connection, a sense of beauty and wonder and connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. But we know that's not true, because very often it has the opposite effect. As he quotes the pasuk, which everyone quotes in this thing, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivot in Parshat Hazinu, that Yeshurun, a poetic name for the Jewish people, became fat, it means they became successful, materially wealthy, Vayivot, and kicked out. So you can see that it's not always the way it works. Yisrael sometimes respond to physical brachas, not by seeing them as an opportunity to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they see them sometimes as, well, I've got everything I need, I don't need God anymore. So he explores why this is the case. In fact, he quotes a Chazal, Gol Nisyoin Ha'oishem in Soin Ha'oini, sometimes being rich is a greater challenge than being poor. Achatamun Pnei She'en Ashpor Bo Ela Beluvash. He said the reason is that you misunderstand what this gift is, because it is disguised in physicality. If you just saw the raw flow, of course, albeit you wouldn't be able to access or understand what it is, but you would know immediately that there's an opportunity to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But since it comes in the guise of a physical gift, it is open to misinterpretation. See, that's the reason. Okay? And almost Mahus HaShpor is a Levusha HaGodli. He said, the more powerful the flow, the greater the opportunity, the greater the bracha or spiritual connection it contains, the more physicalized or corporealized this flow needs to be, and therefore, as within the framework of free will, the more powerful the opportunity is, the greater the opportunity for it to be misused. And that's the pshat, he says, Al-Pi, the Kabbalah of the Arizal, in the Pasuk, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivot. The Yeshurun waxes fat, they become materially successful. The challenge of understanding the nature of this bracha is overwhelming, and sometimes we fail. I see, that's how it's to be understood. He says, however, Hanimshach acha penimius hashpor be'emes mevia ato devekas via shemaim. If you are capable of looking, ignoring the physical guise, and really finding what the spiritual bracha is, then every bracha, every physical gift, every material success is an opportunity for connection, greater understanding in Yiras Shamayim. And he quotes from his grandfather, the Kotzker, to say that when the year is blessed in physical sense, it's automatically blessed with Yiras Shamayim. Which is not an obvious statement, he said, but that's the meaning. That if you're capable of understanding that it's a year which is blessed with physical success and wealth and those things, it means that this is a year where the opportunity to connect to our Kodesh Baruch Hu is greater than any other year. That's the meaning. That's what my grandfather meant. And he said, and these ideas often are expressed in very particularly in the thinking of the Kotzker, in very short, very pithy and sometimes inaccessible statements. But it makes very good sense now you understand the idea. So he says, now we can begin to tie the things together. He said, having said all that, that every flow has to be clothed in the physical guise. The greater the flow and the opportunity for the next to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the deeper the physicality and therefore the greater the opportunity for misuse. He said the trouble is, the same applies to any physical experience, even tefillah. Tefillah, after all, as he's going to explain, occurs in the physical realm. Tefillah ha-moshech ha-shefel me-malah kamusah. And I'm shocked also that the more intense the tefillah is, the greater the degree of connection, the more powerful the flow that it can draw down. But, he said, what happens if the tefillah is articulation? You think ideas, you formulate them, and then you articulate them. Maybe you're reading the words, but maybe it's a spontaneous tefillah, maybe you know the words by pair. But a tefillah is a spoken concept which brings together the thoughts and, as he puts it, quoting other sources, the five tools of articulation, which are the tongue and the palate and the teeth and the throat and so on. It has to go through a physical process. He says that the problem with that is that inevitably the tefillah, the concept, the magnificent, if you like, thoughts get sullied by passing through the realm of the physical. He's now reversing the process. That first part was God reaching us. Now this is us reaching out to God. What happens during that process of articulation? We lose something. Actually, this is something we sense quite naturally. Sometimes we have a thought, an idea we'd like to convey to someone, a sense of awakening or awareness or inspiration. And once we articulate it, that might be good, but it always loses something in translation, if you like. It loses something by passing through the physical realm. And there's a lot written about this. Sfas Emes speaks about this. Sfas Emes is a kind of a cousin school to Sokachov and so on. That things really remain in their pristine form only in the realm of the dim and of the imagination. And once they are articulated, or written down, or expressed in any other physical way, they lose something. And that's because, in the language that he's using, they become clothed or disguised in physicality, and therefore lose something. And he said, and if the objective is to draw down pure spirituality, he said, tefillah won't do the job because of this. It does the job partially. It's a magnificent tool of connection, but it is imperfect for the reasons said. It is constitutionally and intrinsically imperfect. And he says the same thing goes for a korban. Korban conveys, if we assume that we follow the Ramban's understanding in his famous piece in Parshas Vayikra, that the person bringing the korban really sees himself in this guise, and all the things happening to the korban are really happening to him in his imagination, and it creates, that's all lovely, he says, and I'm sure it's extremely meaningful and inspirational, but nonetheless it is an expression of a spiritual aspiration in the realm of the physical, and therefore it is limited. That's the Mahalach. Ach shofar, he says, now he understands what is the shofar about. He says, and this perhaps is the thing that's familiar. Ach shofar, whoever la yot mit pnimius halev biltin nislavesh behei moitzos. This is the key phrase. The shofar is the breath. If you like, he just understands it to be the undiluted spiritual aspiration which is unclothed in any physical guise, and it does not pass through the five utensils of articulation, through the throat and the mouth and the palate and so on. He said, and the sound of the shofar is articulated without any connection or chibur at all with any other part of our physical being. It doesn't have to go through the mouth. It's in some sense, it is the unarticulated cry of the soul. That's what he's trying to say. That you can imagine, and he goes on to explain that this was almost the shofar standing independently. And somehow the breath, this raw breath that's blown into it. And in fact, that explains many of the halachas. You can't have a mouthpiece on your shofar. You can't, every child who picks up a shofar, they hear daddy blowing the shofar, the child picks up the shofar and they go, doo, they make the sound into the shofar. You can't do that. The shofar itself has to make the sound. Otherwise, you've articulated it before it goes into the shofar. You can understand some of the more obscure dinim and hilchos shofar in the light of this. He said, the whole point is, klei shofar hu dovar nifrod me ha'odom, the sound of the shofar is something which is separate from the human being. It's his thoughts, his aspirations, his demureness that have not suffered the limitation of passing through the physicality. Bilti mislabesh begashmius. Unclothed with physicality. It is like that hevel, that breath, that aspiration, that feeling, that cry of the soul, which gets spoiled by articulation, is standing on its own, shouting out and crying out on its own. And when the cry of the soul is undiluted by passes through the physicality, then it can draw down a hashbar, an influence from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is quite of a different quality. It's qualitatively completely different from anything we can achieve in the physical world, as he said, including tefillah and including korbanos as well, for this reason. So he says, Rosh Hashanah Drishahish, this Galan Malchus Shemayim Ba'olam, the objective is that on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malchus should be expressed and felt over everything in existence. He said, that's the goal. That was the original purpose of the first day of human history. Zayom Techilas Maaser, as we call it in Yom Rishon, as we say in the Tefillah in Musaf. The whole purpose of the Bria was that Adam HaRishon should muster all the forces in creation to proclaim HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a completely undiluted form over everything. Proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu Melech on Rosh Hashanah doesn't mean just a statement, yeah, I think he's God, I think he's in control of everything, and even believing it with passion. It means somehow or other achieving that sense of sovereignty over everything in existence. That has to be undiluted. That is a spiritual experience. He said, and that is the pshat in the Ritvot. He said, the Ritvot is trying to say that the process of Malchus, of proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu Melech, what the Malchus are intended to achieve, is more than just proclaiming God King. It's more than just making a statement and believing it and thinking it and committing ourselves in the way we conduct our lives in the light of that understanding. It's more a tool to create a sense of sovereignty in everything in existence, and that cannot be diluted by a physical experience. As such, the pshat in the Gemara, according to the Ritvot in this reading, is that Bamer Bashofar, the phrase with what, with a shofar, has to go on the Malchus. You can only do this job properly with tefillah accompanied by shofar. We need to know what the ideas are. We've got to be able to think them. We've got to understand what the concepts are to begin with. But we can only properly achieve the implementation of those objectives using the shofar, as we've seen, as he's explaining from the Kabbalah, the Arizal. He says, and therefore, he said, the image that he draws from Shalom Melech, that somehow or other, Malchus is not properly there. The idea he's Shaul HaMelech is proclaimed king over the whole of Kali Yisrael, it's more than an announcement, it's more than a celebration, it's an experience that transcends the capacity of human speech, and in fact anything other than the undiluted aspirations of the soul. So he said that is the correct understanding of the Gemara. B'mer b'shofar, what does the shofar do? We should see the shofar as somehow or other a human being divorced from our physicality. That the sound of the shofar represents our strongest unarticulated aspirations, and if we say the tefillahs, the malchus, and consider the concept, and then we accompany those tefillahs with a shofar, then we have a possibility of drawing our shpor down on Rosh Hashanah, which penetrates the world perhaps fully, far more than we could achieve with the tefillahs alone.